Wisconsin. Up North News with Pat Kreitlow starts now.
Well, here we are, and good morning.
Recording in progress.
Another beautiful day from our studios on Lake Wissota in the state of Wisconsin as we share some headlines, opinions, guests, general foolishness. It's Thursday, October 13th, 26 days until Election Day, and more than 126,000 of your neighbors have already voted. There have been more than 412,000 requests put in for absentee ballots, so don't wait. Make a plan to either vote absentee by mail, absentee in person, or be sure you have time off to vote on November 8th because your vote matters. Coming up this hour, Governor Tony Evers and the message he's delivering to undecided voters in the closing weeks of his campaign for re-election. We'll review the latest Marquette poll, which shows Ron Johnson opening up a lead over Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes. The two of them meet in their second and final debate this evening at 6 o'clock. In our 10 o'clock hour, Maggie Keeler, chair of the College Democrats of Wisconsin, talks about the effort to boost turnout among the state's young adult voters, who, surprisingly, according to recent Marquette polls, young voters are moving more toward Republican Ron Johnson, which goes against a lot of conventional wisdom that's out there. To reach the show, 715-388-7155, or send us a note, email by email, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. Let's take care of the weather now so that we can get right into our interview with Governor Evers in the next segment here. Simply put, cool highs, cold lows, breezy, chances of spotty showers throughout the weekend, and those light showers could be mixed with snow flurries from time to time. And the farther north you go, the more likely you'll see some light snow accumulation. There's that word for the first time this season. 40s or 50s for highs during the weekend. Then it gets colder with Sunday night, Monday morning lows down into the teens for some and highs only in the 30s. So please be sure if you've got some rugrats that hang out at the bus stop that it is no longer jacket weather. It's going to be coat weather. Gloves and hats and everything else are going to be necessary by Monday morning if they're not using it already. All right, as mentioned, let's see, we have a debate at 6 tonight. We also have the January 6th committee is going to be meeting. And this note from the campaign of Brad Paff, the Democrat running for governor in the 3rd Congressional District against insurrection-adjacent Derek Van Orden, the Republican nominee. The release is it says a Wisconsin veteran calls on Derek Van Orden to join him in watching the January 6th committee hearing. Town of Bangor supervisor and U.S. Army veteran Sam Arentz called on radical insurrectionist Derek Van Orden to join him at the Bangor Laborers Local 140 to watch the committee hearing. Arentz said, quote, "As a fellow veteran, I'm calling on Derek Van Orden to put his patriotism to the test and join me in watching the January 6th committee hearing on the very same insurrection that he took part in 2 years ago. Derek has been happy to hide from media inquiries, from sharing a debate stage with Brad Paff, and from the voters of this district. He has no right to hide from a brother in arms. And if he's as true of a patriot as he claims, he'll join me at Bangor Laborers Local 140 at noon today. Anything short of that tells me everything I need to know about this so-called patriot." The press release goes on to say the committee has had successes to show how fragile our democracy was 2 years ago, but insurrectionists have slipped through the cracks and many of them are on the ballot this November. Van Orden needs to answer for his participation in the January 6th attack if he wants to be a real candidate for Congress, and he now has the perfect opportunity to do so. So we have at least a moment of drama that is due today in the 3rd Congressional District for that January 6th committee hearing. Hard to say what's going to come up today. It's likely the last hearing that we're going to see before the election and quite potentially before Republicans take over the House of Representatives if polling trends hold true. And we don't know what will come of the committee by then. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that. We know what will come of the committee and the investigation by then. If Republicans take the House of Representatives, I mean, when you put the arsonist in charge of the fire station, just expect more fires and more investigations of the firefighters. And that's likely what we're going to face. I'm sure that there will be impeachment articles drawn up against, President Biden on the very first day of the new Congress in January. They'll probably try to put out an arrest warrant for Hunter Biden, just because, even though that's probably hasn't been a thing in Congress for, decades or centuries, I would not be surprised that the people that have been chanting lock her up and lock him up will try all manner of monkey business. That's certainly been going on in Wisconsin for some time, and we're going to talk later about the latest news article on Republicans who continue to serve on boards, the State Natural Resources Board, the State Technical College Board, who say that they can do this because the state Supreme Court says so, but let's call it what it is. They're stealing, and they're stealing from the voters of Wisconsin. They're stealing from democracy. So that's one of the things we'll get into later on. But first, my interview with Governor Tony Evers, talking about some of the issues that he's running on as he campaigns for re-election. That's coming up right after this break. You're up north. To say that this working from home thing has become too comfortable for me, but I needed to run an errand yesterday. Went out to the garage. I have a Jeep Wrangler, and there were cobwebs on my front grill of my vehicle. That's how little I'm driving it nowadays because of all the work I'm just doing right here in the Lake Wasota studio. So it goes. I guess I got to get out more. Let's get to our interview with Governor Tony Evers. It was recorded Tuesday afternoon right after his appearance at the Milwaukee Rotary Club, where he made a little news saying he would not sign a bill that keeps an abortion ban in place, but does add exceptions for rape and incest, saying that wouldn't go far enough. Women deserve the same rights and choices that they had for a half century before Dobbs. Later, he spoke with me. So here's our interview with Governor Tony Evers. Governor Tony Evers, thank you for joining us up north.
Good to see you again, Pat. It's great to be up north.
Less than 4 weeks to go now until the election. We don't have to review the obvious. Wisconsin is a closely divided state. Every voter should know the value that they have to decide races like this. So, Governor, let's start by having you tell me, what do you think certain blocks of voters are still waiting to hear? Who's persuadable out there, and what is it that they're wanting to hear from you that you're going to be talking about?
Well, I still believe that the policy issues and what we've accomplished still has value. As things get closer to the election, the noise gets louder and louder, and so those things kind of fade away. But I still believe, we've been fixing the damn roads, Pat, and that's made a huge difference, frankly, in all across northern Wisconsin and the entire state, 5,000 miles of it. So we feel good about that. In case people didn't believe that, all they have to do is look for an orange barrel, and they'll kind of get the picture. The other thing that's that I do believe will end up influencing people is our work on making sure that we bring in broadband all across the state. 387,000 households and businesses have it now that didn't have it before, and most of that is in rural Wisconsin. Also, we've been able to focus on our public schools as far as bringing them more resources. Clearly, we're not where we want to be, but we've made some great progress there. And coming out of the pandemic, we're in a good, one of the best times ever for the state of Wisconsin. We've got low unemployment, highest number ever, number of people that are working. And so I think those are the basic things. And, I've been talking about those a lot, and I know a lot of that gets mucked around with the other things. But I just think there's such a, at you know, we're talking to a smaller and smaller group that are undecided. And I have to believe that my opponent's policy statements on some really important things. I while it's been horrible for women in the state, the issue of abortion is critically important. And talk about two completely different views of the world. My opponent believes that it should be criminalized. We should be throwing doctors in jail. And the heck with people that may have been victims of rape or incest. That's his position. My position is I believe women actually do have the right to figure out their reproductive health, and they really don't need Tim Michael's insertion of himself into that process. So that's a huge issue. As I go around the state, people talk about that a lot. The other thing is around our public schools. Schools up north are real gems all across the state, the public schools. And we're facing a situation where my opponent not only has said it's insanity to increase funding for our public schools, but has actually got a plan in place to lower the amount of money they get by 40%. I mean, how many up north schools can deal with that? They can't. And so it's clearly his goal is to move us out of public, or move public education out of what we constitutionally are required to do, and that's to prepare our future scholars.
So you covered a lot of topics there, and I want to come back and visit a couple of them. And since you mentioned broadband early, I wanted to remind the listeners of a series that Up North News did from up in Boulder Junction as an example of what can happen when different layers of government work together in terms of grants and access to resources, not just waiting and hoping the private sector comes in. And the folks in Boulder Junction, now that's a fairly typically Republican area, but the folks up there had a lot of good things to say about working with your office and with the Public Service Commission. Is that the goal going forward? Is, regardless of party, that when you're building an infrastructure, you're focused more on the end product rather than, whatever differences you might have politically going into it?
Oh, absolutely. There's place, Northern Wisconsin isn't necessarily an all Democratic area. In fact, there's lots of people that aren't Democrats. That said, I'd say most of our work has been up north. And yeah, it's a basic. It's like electricity. We're not going to turn electricity off in counties that are Republican. Nor are we going to avoid having people in northern Wisconsin and up north area have good, high quality broadband. I mean, it's like electricity, folks. And we'll continue that. We did 387,000. We're going to do another 300,000 in hopefully 3 years. And it's something that is bipartisan. There are certain things. I think education, for the most part, public education is bipartisan, as well as issues around infrastructure, and that includes broadband.
Let's stick with the rural economy for a moment, especially the Badger bounce back grants. They struck me as in line with what we were all saying when Scott Walker was trying to sugarcoat the Foxconn deal. A lot of us were saying instead of one big bag of cash to one out-of-state business, imagine breaking that up and helping businesses all over the state. So the question is this: will it be proven to have been effective on main streets all across Wisconsin? Or is there concern we're going to look back and say it helped in the short term only?
No, I think it's going to make a huge difference long term. Certainly short term, we're right in the middle of it. But the fact of the matter is 6,200 folks, entrepreneurs, took a plunge with help from the state government, a $10,000 help, which isn't a lot if you start about inventory, hiring people, all that. And every county in the state has taken it. Some entrepreneurs stood up and said, hey, I'm up, I'm game. And the nice thing about it is local businesses like that, they buy locally, they hire locally, they jump, they're part and parcel of the Chamber of Commerce in small towns, and It's easier to lift up a whole neighborhood or a whole town through that Main Street work. Will every one of those 6,200 absolutely make it? I'm sure there will be some movement, but at the end of the day, there will be more. Actually, it's so popular, we put another $25 million in. We anticipate that we're going to have 10,000 new Main Street businesses, hopefully by the end of the year or early next year. That's amazing.
Along those same lines, I think you might have met Hans Breitenmoser. He's a farmer up in Lincoln County, active in the Fair Maps movement, and he visits with us every so often to talk about the rural economy. And he likes to emphasize fixing the supply chain by making more products here and expanding Wisconsin markets, both outside the state and inside. So what do you tell voters about your efforts to increase manufacturing and also increase the footprint for products made in Wisconsin?
Yeah, and we just had a kind of announcement around that in the agriculture sector. The last 2 years were records for us on exports, and we anticipate that's going to continue. Dairy is important. Obviously, cheese is one of our main export items, and so we've been doing a crack up job on that. Actually, the legislature did come in session and one of my special sessions on agriculture, and one of the things that came out of that was money for Department of Ag and Consumer Protection to take this on, and they're doing a great job. Those are great human beings that work down there, but it's also it's turned out well, and our manufacturing world is a little more complex just because of the supply chain there, but we feel good about where our economy is. Our businesses are doing well, our manufacturers are doing well, our tech colleges are doing a great job in providing resources and education programs to kind of upskill people so that they can utilize the computers and the technology that's available now that hasn't been.
So let's compare that to what Tim Michaels is talking about, making noise about flattening the income tax, and whether that turns out to be in the 5% area like he was speculating, or even comes down to the lowest bracket, coupled with property tax limits. What would Wisconsin's economy look like if that flat income tax was adopted in Wisconsin?
That it would help him, that's for sure. Flat tax, essentially, you know, it's the same percentage across the board. Obviously, people that are more wealthy are going to get more money back. And I understand the rationale behind it, but I have a hard time buying it. And if that's coupled with other issues such as, you know, requiring or prohibiting school districts to exceed revenue limits, that's a death knell. I mean, first of all, you're taking away money that normally would be turned around and provided to public schools, and that there'd be less of that, obviously, and then schools would be cramped on the other side to not be able to access the resources locally. So that would not be a good thing for schools, but frankly, it would be a really special thing for somebody like Tim Michaels, because he's up in the stratosphere as far as the amount of money he makes.
Well, speaking of money, let's end this segment talking about the record $5 billion state surplus. Your plan is out in the open to put that to work. Republicans have a plan they're keeping to themselves. You don't exactly have to be James Bond to crack the code on what they would do with it. But we obviously can't tolerate a standoff that watches the fruits of a successfully managed economy wither and sit unused. So what do you think is likely to get the ball rolling early next year on something both you and legislative Republicans can take credit for?
Well, that's just it. We have to find something that is a win for both sides, and I think we can do that. I go back to the basics around education, infrastructure, healthcare, something in that arena. But for sure, the first two. Republicans care about. I mean, look it up north. It's almost all Republican folks that are representing people in northern Wisconsin. Republican moms and dad want good schools just as much as anybody else in the state. And So I think there's always a chance for that, but you know, it's all about who gets the credit and who doesn't get the credit. And I believe we're in a position to make that happen. But it's going to take some while. It takes some time. Obviously, there's still bad blood as from the vantage point of the lame duck section, and then also the Senate not being able to figure out why they won't approve my appointees. Those are big deals, and we got to figure that out too.
We will talk more about that right after this break as we continue our discussion with Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers.
Minnesota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Governor Tony Evers. Governor, before the break, we were talking about the surplus. I wanted to ask you one more question about it. Mm-hmm. It's like asking you to pick a favorite child, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Of all the things you've proposed to be done with the surplus, which one gives the most bang for the buck and would lead voters to say, why aren't legislators getting this done?
Yeah, I have to believe that our significant increase in funding for schools is the biggest bang for the buck. Of course, you know, the bang for the buck is something that's long-term when you talk about education. But you think about right now, on November 8th, there's going to be, I think, 99 referenda across the state, 60-some school districts. And if that doesn't tell you anything, you're not listening. The schools are saying, we need money, and so we have to go to local taxpayers to do it. And it's been the way it has been for decades, frankly. And there are winners and losers in that. If you don't pass a referendum, you struggle mightily. So I do believe people understand that putting $2 billion in towards our schools, where special education is obviously funded at a much higher level. We've been horrible on that over the last decade. In addition, during the pandemic, we obviously saw an increase in issues around mental health for our kids, and that's just something we cannot allow to fester. And so we're putting together a $250 million project that will be a categorical aid that goes on. It won't be something we have to fight for every time. I think there's some help there from the Republicans. I mean, they always jump on the issue of mental health, and I know of several legislators, that's one of their top priorities. But at the end of the day, the bang for the buck is, you know, as I always say, what's best for our kids is best for the state. And I think most people realize that. So that's the main cog there. And also, we're going to really work on literacy. Clearly, we want to make our kids more more literate, and we want to kind of unify the way we prepare teachers, but also staff development going forward also. So those things are really, really important. I've been working with the state superintendent on that. Those are things that we agreed upon so far.
You led me right into asking about Dr. Jill Underly, your successor at the head of DPI, when I interviewed her after her State of Education speech and asked her to comment on Tim Michaels saying that she and you had gone, quote, full woke. And she referred to it as silly and said that, somebody who says that has no idea what we're doing in schools to reach kids and make sure kids feel safe and welcoming. I can't imagine you disagree, or if there's anything you want to add to what Dr. Underly said about being able to walk and chew gum in terms of working on inclusion, diversity, mental health, but also literacy and all the basics of education.
Absolutely. What we do know is that, and I can't imagine any parent that would disagree with it, we want to make sure all kids in our schools feel welcome, feel supported. If they have issues, we can work with them. All kids, not half the kids or three quarters of kids, but all kids. I think that summarizes it from my vantage point. If we can kind of get over that and forget, you know, the whole woke thing. I mean, I hear him say, we shouldn't be doing CRT. We should be doing ABCs. Well, first of all, Tim Michaels, we don't teach CRT and critical race theory in our schools. And second of all, yes, we teach kids ABCs, but a whole bunch of them know them by their parents teach that at home. You got to come to the present century here, Tim, and be cognizant of what actually goes in the schools. My guess is you've never been in a public school in Wisconsin.
Let's have one more question about schools and the pandemic. Talking about it, if for no other reason that we may face a major contagion again, either a COVID variant or something else entirely. What lessons would be applied, if God forbid this happens again at this level, to balance safety with the ongoing need for students to have access to learning?
Yeah, and even though things were complex last time, to be honest, I mean, last time isn't over yet. Obviously, people are still getting COVID-19. But I made it clear right from the beginning, and I do it again, we have to follow the science. And there's public health officials in each county. They can provide those resources to local school boards. That's a local school board issue, and that they should be working with their parents and their teachers and others and the public health people to make those decisions. It is so different between, you know, class sizes are smaller in northern Wisconsin. You know, for the most part, those schools are in pretty good shape. So it's going to be easier to mitigate a disease like COVID-19 when you have fewer kids in about the same space than you do in Milwaukee or Madison. And the community spread is different in Lac des Flambeaux than it is in Milwaukee. And so those things are always going to play a role. We had schools in northern Wisconsin that had school 2 years in a row and maybe had one or two days off between Thanksgiving and Christmas that one time when it was a little bit more severe. So it's impossible for anyone to say this is the way it should work in every school district in the state, and every school district is going to do the exact same thing. It's just not going to work that way, and I'll continue to follow the science.
Let's go back to the issue of abortion and women's choice on their reproductive care. Over the summer, you electrified a crowd at the state Democratic convention by noting a governor could grant clemency to anyone charged under the 1849 abortion ban. It was quickly followed up by folks who wanted to focus more on changing the law as a more permanent solution. But I wonder now, if you're reelected, whether we might need to see you putting that power to work if some district attorney tries to make a name for themselves next year. Are you prepared to take on that kind of action and whatever legal or legislative blowback might come of it?
Doesn't matter. We're gonna do everything we. First of all, we're gonna do everything we can to overturn that 1849 law. It's an abomination on the state. So we're gonna continue to do that. If indeed some local district attorney says, well, we're going to take this on, and this doctor is now charged, we will absolutely, I'll provide clemency for that. We just won't have it. This is a serious thing, as it also relates, and I know I'm going to run out of time here, so I'm going to make this quick. I do believe that we will see at some point in time, if things go in a bad way here, that we have no or very few OBGYNs in northern Wisconsin right now. It's we have a severe shortage. Can you imagine if that 1849 law stays in place? And can you imagine what's going to happen then? Next is that the accreditation from our two medical schools to prepare OBGYNs is going to disappear also. And so we won't even be able to train them in the state of Wisconsin. Who is going to move to Wisconsin? What OBGYN, any place in the country, is going to move here? It's not going to happen. So there's an economic piece here. There's a piece about health care all across the state and that we have to be concerned about. But at the end of the day, it's about that woman who should have the right to make that decision. That's what it's about. This is a big deal. I mean, do I think that there are going to be people voting on that issue? Yes, they should. Do I think there's going to be people voting on the issue of, you know, I'm really sick of hearing about Mike Gabelman and Tom and Tim Michaels talking about how bad our election system is? They should be afraid of that. They're going to mess around with that until we have the worst one in the country.
And I just want to echo as well, our friend, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, couldn't be here for this, but I know you've talked to her before, and she's talked about this issue and would be giving a very hearty amen if she were here right now. And so, again, I want to tip my cap to her for helping keep this issue in front of folks in Wisconsin. But you talked about the threat to democracy, so let's end on that note. And put it very directly, what happens in this election will have a major impact on the next presidential election 2 years from now. So, Governor, what is the very real possible scenario here in 2024 if Republicans this year were to make a clean sweep of governor, attorney general, secretary of state to go along with the legislature?
Absolutely. It would change the face of Wisconsin in a very dramatic way. I vetoed over the last 3.5 years several bills that would make it more difficult for people to vote, people that live in nursing homes, people with physical disabilities, you name it. And all those bills, they're going to come back. All 146, I think the number is, a handful of those are around abortion, handful of them are around, several of them are around voting rights. People will lose voting rights as a result of that, because the Republicans have promised to bring them all back, have them signed. We'll have guns. We'll have loaded guns on schoolyards, on school property. All those things will happen. In addition, we will have a governor who right now doesn't understand how important his job is as governor to certify elections. I certify elections. I can tell you I certified the last election because it's fair, safe, and secure. The Wisconsin Elections Board sent me what the results were. I certified. I followed the law. That it would just take a small detour on my successor to make that last the next election a mess. And every time there's a mess, there's going to be people saying, I don't want to vote. I'm tired of this. And that's going to make it more difficult for Democrats such as Joe Biden or any Democrat that might be running on the national ticket in 2024. Obviously, Tammy Baldwin is the most popular Democrat there is in the state. She'll have a more difficult time. There's no question. If we mess with our voting rights, it's going to hurt us for decades.
Governor Tony Evers, we greatly appreciate your time. Thank you so much for the visit today.
Thanks a lot, Pat. It's good to be here.
Well, there you go. Governor Tony Evers talking with us on Tuesday afternoon. And just looking at a story that's come in from Wisconsin Public Radio, one that we thought might be brewing here related to what the governor just had to say about Tim Michaels' position on abortion. Tim Michaels was asked in 2004, you'll recall that he's hardly an outsider. He has run statewide before, ran against Russ Feingold in 2004, and he was asked, what would he say to a 12-year-old girl who'd been raped, given his opposition to any abortion exemptions for rape or for incest. And he was interviewed on the Wisconsin Public Radio show Route 51, and Michaels called it one of those very, very extreme cases, said he couldn't think of a worse crime, and his heart would go out to anyone in that situation. Quote, but I think in the end, what I would try to tell them is, there's a life in there, a life that was created by God. And if you carry that baby full term, there'll be 25 or 35 couples that will be there willing and ready to adopt that baby and love it and raise it as their own. So that's where my position is on this. And I make no apology for being pro-life. In other words, he makes no apology for forcing 12-year-old rape victims to endure pregnancy, labor, childbirth, all of the health complications that come of it. He has no problem with government forcing 12-year-old rape victims through a pregnancy to carry their rapist baby against their will. It's their choice, frightened, terrified, already mortified. They wouldn't have a choice if Tim Michaels were to become governor. And the notion that there will be 25 or 35 couples right there willing and ready to adopt the baby, are you kidding me? No, there won't be. You're not going to allow a 12-year-old girl who's been raped to then have her life interfered with a couple of dozen couples all competing, saying, please give me your baby, as if that girl isn't going through enough. But in Tim Michael's imagination, that's the loving scenario that would happen to every young girl who's sexually assaulted, when the real world isn't nearly that Norman Rockwell as Tim Michaels would like to think it is. So again, thanks to Governor Evers for his time in that interview. We'll wrap up this hour's visit next. You're up north. Get to the criminals who are stealing seats on Wisconsin's Natural Resources Board and Technical College Board in just a second here. But coming off of the Governor Evers interview and the newly revealed Tim Michaels comments about forcing 12-year-old rape victims to give birth, there is also a story in the Wisconsin State Journal by Alexander Scherr worth passing along, who reports on how Ron Johnson has said in the past he would support exceptions for rape and incest, but not always. He has also signed on to a bill that would ban all procedures, and there would not be any exceptions for rape or incest. He, in 2011, co-sponsored a bill that would have granted fetuses and people equal rights under the 14th Amendment, the so-called personhood bills. The measure does not specifically mention abortion and clarified that fetuses from the point of fertilization would be protected by the same rights as people. Personhood is not consistent with rape and incest exceptions, says Mary Ziegler, a law professor at the University of California, Davis. Because, as most anti-abortion groups will tell you, if you view that fetus or unborn child as a person, the same as, say, a five-year-old, you couldn't take the life of a five-year-old because it was conceived in rape and incest. So, yes, some personhood bills could contain exceptions for rape and incest, that's not the bill that Ron Johnson signed on to. The one that he signed on to in 2011 had no such exceptions. And, you know, as a result, he was willing to support the most extreme position. So if Ron Johnson is elected this November, and if Republicans were eventually not only to take control of Congress, but let's say the White House, you know, 2 years from now, while Johnson would still be serving that third term, you could very well see a personhood bill pass and become law, which would give a fertilized egg the same rights as any other person, which could also lead to fewer rights for the person carrying that fertilized egg, because there would be no exceptions for the life of the mother, for the life of the girl who's carrying that fertilized egg. You are saying that, you know, that girl's life matters less than that newly fertilized egg. Now, that should not be a major surprise when you consider that that same 12-year-old girl, her life also means less to Ron Johnson and Tim Michaels and others than mass shooters. And I'm sorry if that sounds extreme, but I don't know why more people don't call it what it is. This is the only country on earth that winks and nods at the mass slaughter of children and says, well, you know, there's our hands are tied. There's really nothing we can do. That's baloney. Of course, there are things we can do. There are things that have been done in the past that have worked, like an assault weapons ban. There are red flag laws that can be passed so that people with mental instability don't have access to their weapons for a temporary time. And yet, even those most basic and wildly popular safeguards are opposed by people like Johnson and Michaels. And so basically, it's not just a 12-year-old girl who we're talking about here. But frankly, if there's anybody that you care for who is a child, either a school student who could be murdered at any point or could be raped and impregnated at any point. You really have to ask yourself just how far some of these politicians are willing to go and whether it's worth your while to support them. And they're not just opposed to the rights of children and protecting the lives of children. This trend toward opposing democracy itself should also chill you. We are already familiar with Ron Johnson's role in this, and we're going to have more to say later in the program as a well-known Wisconsin Republican blogger writes why he will not vote for Ron Johnson and Tim Michaels this year. He's going to vote for Mandela Barnes and Tony Evers, and we'll talk more about that in a bit. But it's not just Ron Johnson, and it's not just Tim Michaels playing footsie with fascism. You have people like Mary Williams, former state representative, and others who are serving on the Wisconsin Technical College System Board long after their terms have expired and refuse to step down. And Republicans running the Wisconsin State Senate refuse to confirm the nominees put forward by Governor Evers. Even now, in the fourth year of his term, that means it's no longer a matter of, we have questions about this nominee, we'd like to learn more. No, it's not. You have weaponized a part of democracy to make it more hostile to democracy, that the will of the voters will not be respected. So the Journal Sentinel has a new story. We've talked at length about Fred Prehn, who is a squatter on the State Natural Resources Board, and the way that he has conspired with Republican lawmakers and former Governor Scott Walker to refuse to step down from the Natural Resources Board. But Kelly Meyerhofer in the Journal Sentinel also talks about the three women who are refusing to leave the Technical College System Board, including former State Rep Mary Williams, who says, all you have to do is see what the Supreme Court did, which means she's hiding behind the right-wing justices on the court, who recently said, yeah, they don't have any problem with this blatantly anti-democracy move by Republicans to not confirm the nominees of the chief executive of the state. And please don't pretend for a moment that they wouldn't howl and scream bloody murder if the shoe was on the other foot. Now, plenty of other appointees have stepped down when their terms have expired. But if you've never met Mary Williams, you'll understand her now when I tell you that the note says that when asked about that, Williams said, well, everyone's an individual. Now I'm going to hang up and I don't want you to call me again. And then she hung up on the reporter. It just reminds us all that the next election after this one, and yes, it's always election time in this day and age, the next one, next April, is for a seat on the state Supreme Court, which currently is controlled by the extreme right in American politics by a 4-3 margin. A 4-3 margin. And one of those far-right justices is stepping down, not running for re-election come April. So there is a chance that progressives, moderates, anything that respects democracy has a chance to take control of the court in that election next April, so that we have respect for democracy, so that we have respect for the lives of our children. We'll have more about the new Marquette poll coming up in the next hour. You're up north.